coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Realm. Chris Jordan coming at you in a pre-recorded fashion. I am out with my amazing wife, Amy, this evening. It's not often that I am not live on the air on a Tuesday, but whenever I am, we always do great pre-recorded stuff. We have a couple of fantastic guests tonight. Up first will be Lynn Buchanan. He is the author of the book Seventh Sense, The Secrets of Remote Viewing, as told by a psychic spy for the U.S. military. He was involved with Project Stargate, the government remote viewing program. He runs his PSI, which is Problem Solutions Innovations, at crviewer.com. We will be talking about remote viewing with the amazing Lynn Buchanan this evening, Project Stargate. The actual science behind it, I say science because this is not like a statistical anomaly like a lot of people make it out to be. Remote viewing is an amazing world of research, and we'll be getting into that with Lynn, as well as his applications, a couple of stories behind the scenes, things like that. While you are online checking out crviewer.com, do, of course, make sure to go by our website, curiousrealm.com. That's where you can not only find all the episodes and follow us on social media, but that's also where you can go over and visit the Knowledge Vault. If you go to curiousrealm.com/knowledge, that will take you to the Knowledge Vault, and you'll see a little page there with a bunch of topics. If you go to the first one, Declassified Programs and Documents, down toward the bottom of that page, you will see listed right here under CIA Project Mockingbird and MKUltra Project Stargate. So feel free to follow the bouncing ball this evening. What that will take you to is the actual declassified documents of Project Stargate, the government remote viewing program, what its missions were, what its definitions were. There's also a great compendium to go with that as well, right underneath it. So follow along with that stuff, folks. And of course, while you're online, make sure to stop on by our social media page, Curious Realm on Facebook. That's where you can check out the news of the week. Let's get into a couple topics real quick before we bring on our first guest. Chinese scientists are eyeing a lunar lava tube as the location for a moon base. That coming to you out of the debrief. Out of Interesting Engineering, an all-new electric drone that is totally silent and uses ion propulsion. We really need to get somebody on to talk about ion propulsion. Becoming a very, very common technological use nowadays. Out of astronomy.com, Curiosity rover quantifies key ingredient for life on Mars. It recently measured the ratio of organic carbon in Martian rocks. And out of Live Science, what did King Tut look like? People were posting all kinds of images, of course, of Steve Martin. So stop on by, check that out. Join the conversation of thousands there on social media with Curious Realm, folks. That is the news of the week. I am so excited to welcome back our guest today. I had the opportunity of meeting Lynn Buchanan in person at the International Remote Viewing Association conference in Menlo Park, California. We shared a couple meals together and had a great interview. It was super fantastic meeting him, and I'm so glad to welcome him back on the show. Welcome, Lynn Buchanan. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me. This is an honor.
Well, it's more than an honor to speak with you again. I have been in love with your research for years and years, as well as your work. The fact that you are one of the folks out there who is commercially using remote viewing with your business, crviewer.com, not only giving classes like a lot of people do, but using it in different aspects in the corporate world. What brought you to the idea of using this technology in that way?
Well, when I first got out of service, we started working for police departments. And as we worked for the police departments, we found out that they had different needs than, of course, the military does. A lot of the same needs, you know, missing soldiers, missing people, missing evidence and things like that. But then some other people, once it became public knowledge that this was declassified and out there, we started getting calls from doctors. One of the first things that we got was actually from realtors. Realtors will sell, you know, will show 10 houses and hope to make a sale. And they were wondering if there was some way they could find out what the customer who walked in really actually wanted and would afford and would buy in order to not have to sell them, you know, show them so many houses. Sure. And so they started using this and got to where they were showing like 3 houses and making a sale. And so this was one of the first civilian applications we got. Then, of course, there were people who, this always tickled me. They would call and they would say, "Hey, if you will tell me the lottery numbers for this week's big lottery, I'll give you 1% of it."
If I knew that, I'd have 100% of it. I wouldn't need your 1%.
I don't know what their logical thinking was, but anyway.
I'll split it with you, 92-8.
That's right. And, you know, people just started coming with new applications, new needs. And so we started using the controlled remote viewing for that. But in the process, we also realized that we needed to make different advancements in the remote viewing to get it away from strictly military applications and into the civilian realm. And over the years, over the last 20 some odd years, I guess, we have been continually databasing, finding out what does work for the civilian arena, what doesn't work. We've started working for corporations, scientific corporations, research and development, medical applications. We're doing some right now, space research and development. And just, you know, it's just blossomed over the years as more and more people find out that this is a really useful tool. We're even at a few times now training corporations to have their own controlled remote viewing units.
That's incredible. And it, whenever we met, there was a Texas-based space company. That was there. And I remember John Brandenburg had one of their hats.
If you want to know about the Ion Drive, you ought to get John.
I would love to do that. Let's talk about that afterward, because that's, I mean, to me, the fact that they are leaning on remote viewing for things like landing sites, that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. Let's take a step back real quick. And for any of our audience who may not be familiar with controlled remote viewing. I mean, we've talked about remote viewing a few times on the show. Many of them may be familiar with the concept, but there's a difference between Wild West remote viewing and controlled remote viewing.
Yes.
Let's explain to the audience the difference there.
Okay. Generally, when this became public knowledge, almost every psychic out there realized that this was developed under scientific rigors and oversight from the government, and was proven, databased, and so forth. And so it was scientific. And so psychics started saying they were remote viewers. And so we had crystal ball remote viewing, palm remote viewing, tea leaf remote viewing, and all of that. And that finally settled into where remote viewing became the new word for psychic.
Yeah.
And the military, however, they researched this. They found out that the Russians, for years, had been using psychic spies against the U.S. They were getting our secrets like crazy. They were looking for ground agents, you know, Russian agents, cyber attacks and all that, and couldn't find it. And they found out because of a defector from Russia, they found out that one of the ways they were getting our secrets was through psychic spies. So they decided, well, if they're going to do it to us, we ought to look at doing it right back to them. And so they went out to Stanford Research Institute and got some laser physicists who had already written papers on how the intentions of a researcher, just the mere thought intentions of a researcher, can affect the research. And so they hired two people, Pat Price, a retired policeman, and Inga Swan, an artist who worked for the United Nations. And Inga started developing a methodology. Inga's genius. He started developing a methodology which doesn't really concern itself with psychic functioning. It concerns itself with the fact that your subconscious mind has psychic ability. It has intuition. And so what he developed was an interview and report process. Mainly just that, interviewing your subconscious mind and reporting what it tells you. And with practice, this was developed, with practice, databasing, researching, and all that. This was developed into a methodology where we had people in the unit who were sitting down and drawing the floor plans of the place where a hostage was being held so that the rescuers could go in and rescue the hostage without getting him killed. And, you know, finding out what was in documents locked in safes over in foreign countries. And things like this. What were the plans and intentions of some foreign leader? With a high degree of accuracy, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was actually the remote viewing program that originally gave the evidence for the hidden microwave bugs in the U.S. Embassy.
Yeah, that was Joe McMonagle. And in fact, when the Marines tried to go in and rescue the hostages the hostage crisis in Iran.
In Iran, yeah.
Our viewers were in on that, and they saw that the Marine helicopters were grounded because of a sandstorm. And our report up the chain of command to the president, got there 10 minutes before the electronic report came in, you know, that the Marines had reported that they were grounded because the sand was in their motors and they couldn't fly. Wow. And so we got it 10 minutes before the Marines did.
Well, and that brings me to the first listener question for you, Lynn, which is, why would the government invest in remote viewing? Now, you mentioned a while ago the laser physicists who had written this paper, and it's a concept that we talk about regularly on the show, and that is the idea of an intelligent universe, a reactive universe, the fact of the atom has to know that somebody is trying to observe it in order for the camera to be fast enough to catch the atom. It's right. Not that the camera shutter is actively as fast as that atom or faster than the atom. It's that the atom knows it's being observed, so it pauses and lets you take a picture. And that's really remarkable, and it really does blow a lot of straight, like, laboratory science out of the water whenever you consider the fact that the literal intent, which is what you're trying to get rid of in science, is the idea of, like, an expected result, you know?
That's right.
But the fact that your expectation of result could totally taint your experiment because you are unintentionally influencing the universe around you, that's a deep, hard concept for science to get. So,
oh yeah, it's one they don't want to get.
So with literally that to go on, what was it that made the government go, okay, let's put money into this? Because there was, like you said, the knowledge of the Russian program. And then there was this paper and these researchers, you know, people like Russell Targ, Hal Puthoff, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The intelligence, you know, the intelligence field may laugh at some stuff like, oh, a bunch of psychics, but they don't take anything for granted. And you know, a lot of people had a laugh, oh, the Russians are using psychics. But the intelligence field, they said, well, hey, if it seems to work, we need to look into it. And so they didn't put money into the remote viewing. What they did was they put money into the laser physicist, who then took their findings and did research into whether or not this could be used to actually gain intelligence. And when they found out through their research and databasing and all that, that yes, it could, that's when the government finally said, okay, then we better start doing it. And that's when they did it. But part of that was the, in that research area, the big secret thing at the biggest secret development at the time was the M1 Abrams tank. And, I mean, it was way above top secret. And so, I think it was Joe McMonagle. They tasked him with it. And, all they said was, this is, you know, they gave him some numbers. This is project so and so. Tell us about it. He not only described it, he also drew it and drew it from the, view of a person sitting in the seat on the tank. And, they sent out the black cars. They thought, you know, they were going to prosecute Joe because they thought he was a spy. And of course he was, you know, but anyway, that proved that it worked and it got the government's attention. And so they said, hey, if this works, hey, let's use it. And so they developed the controlled remote viewing program, and we did a lot of good work in there.
And now, what part did you play in the program? Where I know you were a remote viewer for them, but were you an operational head? How did you come to become, I guess, courted into that program and read onto it to begin with?
If you've seen the movie The Man Who Stared at Goats,
That is always my reference for you, by the way. When people are like, well, who are you talking about? This is what I'm talking about.
I was over in Augsburg, Germany, and this incident happened where I got flaming mad. And since I was around 12 years old, anytime I get flaming mad, things fall off shelves. And, you know, you've heard of the poltergeist kids. Things fall off shelves. Things break. It's always been that I get upset at work. The printer's going to go down and so on. And so I got flaming mad. And when I did, the entire fuel station went down. General Stubblebein, the head of the Intelligence and Security Command, got wind of this. He came out to Augsburg and he wanted to start a remote influencing unit where we would destroy enemy computers with the end goal of learning to control enemy computers to make their missiles go turn around and go right back at them or put false information into their computers and all that. And Congress had been caught in the 60s doing mind control, and they said, no, this sounds like mind control. We're not going to do that. So they wouldn't fund it. And so General Stubblebine took me out to Fort Meade. I had no assignment at the time because he had pulled me out of Augsburg. So he took me out to Fort Meade and put me into the remote viewing unit. And I am so glad he did. I took to it like a duck to water. It's a wonderful, it's the most interesting job I think anybody could ever have in their life.
I would imagine so, especially just the idea that you would be able to hone your abilities to the point of comfort that you have. Start getting into the process of remote viewing, because is it the fact that A, anybody can remote view? Do you have to be a preternatural psychic? Do you have to be, as you said, a poltergeist kid, you know, somebody who emanates so much energy at some moments that they have to be careful?
And the answer is no, you don't. When Ingo started developing this methodology, he took the fact that, you know, martial artists, ninja people, and so forth, they don't depend on logical, conscious mind thinking. Because if you do, you get in a fight and you think of what is coming next, you're going to wind up on the floor. Yeah. And your intuition, your subconscious mind knows what's coming. And so you develop the wax on, wipe off, wax on, wipe off. You know, you develop the physical moves for subconscious awareness. And so Ingo said, well, let's try doing the same. And so he would set you at a desk and he would say, okay, I want you to take this pen and paper and make a reflexive motion when I say land. And most people would make a straight line, or they'd make a mountain or something like that. And then space and water, they'd make a wavy line and so forth. And he would do this thousands of times until it became a knee-jerk reaction. And pretty soon what would happen was you would make the line before he called the word. And at that point, he knew that your subconscious was making the physical reaction. And once that happened, he would start saying, okay, we have target number one for the day. What's at the target? And your hand would make like a straight line, wavy line. Okay. And you'd say, well, I have no idea what the target is, but I know that there's some land and some water. And he'd open the envelope and there would be a picture of the beach. You would make wavy line and something for manufacturing. He'd open the envelope and there'd be a ship sitting on the water and so forth. And you trained and trained and practiced this. And pretty soon it got to where you could, through this knee-jerk reaction, you could describe what is out of sight. And then, once he got you to where you could do that, he would say, okay, now I want you to imagine you're at this water that you found. And I want you to taste it. What do you taste? Oh, it's salty. Ah, okay. We found something about the water. And it's cold. And it smells fishy or something like that. And he would get your other senses involved. This is stage two of the training. And it would get to where you could say, I still don't know what the target is. But I know there's water there that is really salty and smelly and cold and all that. And there's land there that's hilly, and you could describe the land that was there and all that. And then in the third stage of it, he would say, okay, you got this land that's hilly. Draw me a sketch of it. And you would start feeling your way along the page, again with a martial art aspect. You draw a line and, oh, that doesn't feel right. And then you draw another. Yeah, this feels right. And pretty soon you were winding up drawing pictures of the target. And then he went on through the higher stages. But those three main stages, those are the basis of controlled remote viewing. It's not where you sit there and close your eyes and wait for your, you know, wait for the spirit to talk to you or anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not necessarily like Madame Blavatsky and going into a trance or something like that. Oh. Right now I've got the documents up, and the definition of remote viewer is what really, really interests me, because like you said, most people hear remote viewing, they are just fully thinking psychic. But when you look at this and see the definition, a person who perceives, communicates with, and or perturbs characteristics of a designated target, person, or event. So like you're saying, they can give you fine, and not just gross detail, but fine detail. How salty is the water?
That's right.
Yeah. Things like that. And not only that, they could salt the water. Because like it says, it's someone who can perturb the characteristics of a target person or event.
That's a much higher advanced stage. Yeah.
And I guess that brings up number one, a really good reason, because if you can perturb something at a distance or perturb a target or a person, like you said, a remote influencing unit, so to speak.
Yeah.
That would be a fantastic military use of the technology of remote viewing. Now, with that being said, another one of the questions that we had from a listener that I think it's a great time to ask is, with Project Stargate and the remote viewing program being under government, and especially military government auspice, were there any casualties during the program?
Any
that you can speak of, anyway. Well, I mean, were there people that were harmed because of the program? Was there anybody that died due to psychic attack from an enemy or things like that?
You mean any one of us?
Yeah.
No. We did have one who got cancer and died, but that was not considered to be part of the remote viewing effort, you know, was not considered to be the cause. But as far as us affecting them, we were given the edict, I mean, absolute edict. We were there to collect intelligence. We were there not to do remote influencing. And so some influencing did happen over the years, but it was never officially tasked or sanctioned.
I could see how incidental influencing would happen, especially just given the root of the research to begin with, the fact that the root of the original papers, things like that, was a scientist influencing an experiment unbeknownst to himself, you know.
Sure.
So even the fact that, you know, something like that could happen by happenstance while you're embodying another place, so to speak. Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, the question that I never wanted to find the answer to, never wanted to go find the answer to, was, did they have another unit that was doing that?
Mm.
And from the fact that they would not support General Stovall's effort to create such a unit, I've always kind of doubted that they had such a unit doing the influence. But no, we had the strong edict.
Yeah,
you are not to do influencing. Yeah.
Well, and or psychic wet work, what have you?
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess that raises another question that we talk about on the show regularly, and that's targeting, you know, whether it's by military, private contractors, things like that, targeted individuals, people who claim to be targeted by technologies. Have you seen any connection between those two worlds? Have you ever been targeted, for instance, because of your involvement with past government programs with technologies?
Absolutely.
Like remote viewing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, on the targeting, we were absolutely told that it was a prison offense for us to target any U.S. citizen unless it was officially tasked to us for proven purposes of national defense, and then it had to go through the congressional approval and all of that before we could ever do it. And I don't think that more than one or two times during the entire 8.5 years that I was there in the unit, we got a task to collect intelligence on a U.S. citizen. The main one was a drug agent that had gone rogue and was selling drugs, and, you know, but he had gone rogue. But as far as U.S. citizens, that was for us a jail offense if we did that.
Wow. Wow. but no, like you said, known to happen. And yeah, just the fact of being involved with programs like this to begin with, I'm sure puts your name on a list. much less if you continue the work like you have, you know, with PSI and everything else.
Yeah, the Russians were always looking for us. So were the Chinese. Yeah.
And what has it been like for you, I guess, since this technology and since the program went public so many years ago? You know, have you ever seen any blowback from that? Have you ever gotten any blowback from your involvement in the program?
Yeah. First of all, a lot of hatred from people who are out to hate anything psychic or anything intuitional and all that. I get a lot of attacks on my computer, on my website and all that, you know, yeah. Just haters gotta hate. And, also, just the, you know, yeah, I go to church. And there are some of the people, you know, once it first came out, what I had done for the military in this, went to church one day and it looked like, have you ever taken some soap and dropped it into the middle of a thing of oil, its own water, how the oil just stains out to the side? And it looked like I was sitting there in church, my wife and I. And there was this huge circle of empty seats around us.
I can see how within certain communities, much like in, you know, we talk about it regularly on the show, the fact of everybody wants a quote paranormal experience, you know, like, oh, yeah. I'd love to see a UFO. Oh yeah. You know, because quite a few of the people that I've interviewed, like it drove their relationships apart. Like, the person that they saw the event with, like they don't even talk anymore, and they were like war buddies. You know, So you sure you want that event? And I guess that's kind of a question that comes to bear when you're talking about something like remote viewing. Number one, like you said, you don't necessarily have to be a psychically skilled individual to remote view and to follow the protocols of controlled remote viewing. However,
that's right. Everybody has intuition. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I guess my question is it that easy to cut off once you learn to control remote view, things like that? Is it the fact of, you're only using that faculty when you are going through protocol? Or is it the fact of you can now dry read everybody that you walk into a room with?
Well, those, you know, as you develop your subconscious and get that line of communication going, that's going to start happening. You get much more practically intuitive. I don't think it makes you more intuitive. It just gives you more access to your subconscious mind. However, you can cut it off. The controlled remote viewing, yeah. I mean, if you're not sitting down with a pen and paper going through the protocol, you're not controlled remote viewing. Mm. And so you'll find many people who say, oh, I'm a controlled remote viewer and I do it without the pen and paper. No, you don't. You're a psychic.
And
there's some good psychics out there. Sure. Really good.
Absolutely. And, you know, no fault to them, no fault to what they do. Even one of the people that we spoke with at the conference, the last person that we had on who went through your program and is a controlled remote viewer, made a very, very huge distinction between when she is doing psychic work and when she is remote viewing.
Oh, absolutely. It's a different thing.
Yeah. And like you said, you may be doing a type of remote viewing, what have you, but you are not controlled remote viewing if you are not following the protocols. And that's one of the things that I definitely wanted to bring up as we kind of switch the topic to your work with PSI.
Well, how let me just one thing.
Go ahead.
The term controlled remote viewing, most people think of controlled remote viewers as remote viewers who are controlled, and that's not it at all. Controlled remote viewing means you're a psychic who has control over the remote viewing you're doing. And that's the whole thing. The Inga Swan method is not psychic in and of itself. It is something, it is a methodology that gives you control over your psychic ability by connecting you to your subconscious mind. And the thing is, your subconscious mind not only knows what's going on in Russia at the Kremlin right now, it also knows why you do those things you have you don't want to do, but you do them anyway. Why you don't do the things you want to do and they never get done, you know. And so it not only knows the outer world, it knows the inner world as well. And so once you establish this connection with your subconscious mind, it opens not only know the world, know the universe and time and space, but know thyself as well. And it's, man, what a difference. Yeah.
Well, and how important is that, I guess, clearing of house? And you know, is it the fact of, in addition to your remote viewing work, that you meditate daily, that you try and keep those mental surfaces clear, so to speak, you know, so that you are ready to remote view? How do you prepare for a session to begin with, Lynn?
For the controlled remote viewing sessions, many people find different ways to calm themselves and quieten themselves. Some people will listen to music. Some people will meditate. One of my students stacks stones, makes these stacks of stones because the balancing gets them so focused on that that they get everything else in their life out of the way. Some people do artwork. Some people play music. I have found that if I wash the car, clean the garage, do the dishes, do the remote viewing, go cut the lawn and all that, and just make it a wop, wop, wop thing, sure, just another job in a day, that's when I get the best results.
When you just make it a rote part of your day instead of making it a purposeful focus.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Because at that point, you really do get, I suppose, a much more reactive than proactive. You know, you're able to take in a lot more rather than having, like you're saying, that expectation that the scientist may have that might be influencing the experiment to begin with.
That's right, yeah. And everybody has their best way, and the way you find out your best way is by keeping data.
Well, let's start getting into that, because data is now the world that you swim in with PSI, Problem Solutions Innovations, your website, and bringing this work into the world of corporations, into the world of stock markets, into the world of trading and commodities. It's real, like you said earlier, real estate. You're talking about some real estate, like you're talking millions and billions, man. That's a lot of commas and zeros to be bringing something as some folks might say as willy-nilly as remote viewing to. But it is something that people have really started taking seriously over the last 20 years. And let's get into that. What brought you to founding PSI and bringing this technology to other people, giving people student resources, giving people one-on-one training, and teaching them to focus it toward different branches like that?
Well, what brought me to form PSI, when I got out of the military, I went to work for the Defense Intelligence Agency as a database expert on their. They have the largest wide area network in the world, even beyond Russia's. And I started working on that as a manager. And as I did, there were people in the government who found out that I had become the trainer of the remote viewing unit. And so I was getting contacted by the people who had the security clearances. I got the permission to start teaching them and the government the remote viewing. When it became declassified, all of a sudden, we had just 80 to 100 people a day phoning on the phone, wanting the training because they found out that I was the trainer. And I had been driving into 2 hours into D.C. every morning, working a 12-hour day, driving 2 hours home in the evening. And it finally dawned on me, hey, I can train people in this, and I don't have to do all that D.C. garbage and fight with the politicians and everything else. And so I just took the leap. I quit the government job and started training remote viewing and never looked back.
Wow. Wow. And once again, to know that you have come to the point of basically founding a school of this science and teaching it. Is incredible and awesome, and good for you for carrying it on and teaching it to new generations.
It's the most fascinating thing I've ever done in my life. I love it.
What would you say has been probably the biggest knowledge nugget that you've gained since learning this technique and since stepping into the world of remote viewing, Lynn?
The biggest personal one?
Yeah.
The biggest personal one came as a practice session while I was still in the unit. I had been doing the bad guys, finding plans and intentions of all the enemy leaders and all that. And some of those people are crazy. Some of, you know, Saddam Hussein was just flat out crazy. Idi Amin was a cannibal, and that's been proven. And so anyway, it was wearing me down. And so I went into the director one day and I said, look, give me Bozo the Clown, give me Mother Teresa, give me something besides these evil people. It's just wearing me down. And he said, you're a soldier, do your damn job, get out of my office, you know.
No, so I did.
And so anyway, there came a lull in international activities, and I went over one day for a practice session. I didn't know it was a practice session. And the monitor said, okay, you're doing a personality assessment today. Personality assessment is where you just observe a person rather than getting into their mind and getting their plans and intentions. You observe and describe the person you're serving. And so I got this target. I started the session, and all of a sudden I realized, hey, this isn't a bad guy. This is a good guy. And so finally I got a good guy, you know. And so I did this session, and by the end of the session, I felt like I was just glowing. And my summary for that session was, whatever evil you think this guy did, he didn't do it. This is one of the most perfect people I've ever met. And I ended the session. The monitor opened the envelope, took the tasking page out, and the director had handwritten on a piece of paper, Jesus. And I would not say, you know, that I have met Jesus person, and all that, but and the remote viewing in that aspect. Yeah. And the interaction there changed my life. It really did.
Wow. Wow.
That it made a difference in my life. Yeah.
That is beautiful, and what an incredible account, Lynn, to share. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because I myself have had my own Jesus presence moment, not like that, but it is a life-changing experience when something that big slaps you in the face.
Oh yeah.
Good on you for being open to that and for being open to the definition of that experience in that way.
Well, in that experience, I was feeling like just a piece of trash in front of this person that was so perfect and all that. And he basically let me know that everything that I've done bad, he's seen worse. Mm-hmm. Everything that I've done good, he's seen better. And he didn't care. He loved me anyway. Yeah. And accepted me. And, you know, I was raised Hardshell Baptist. I mean, you dance with that girl, you're going to hell and all that. and all of that rigorous Hardshell fundamentalist religion, I realized wasn't necessary. He cared for me anyway.
Yeah.
So it changed my life. Really did.
Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful. And to know that you had that not through your religious experience, but through your experience with remote viewing and being open-minded in that way. It wasn't in church that it happened for you.
That's right. And it was totally the opposite of my religious upbringing.
Wow. You know? Yeah. Yeah. No, like the direct antithesis, like you said, going back to church after the revelations of the program to the world, it was like oil and water. They didn't get along. With that in mind, how does somebody start going down the path of remote viewing? They've contacted you via your website at crviewer.com. How do they sign up for the basic class? What is their treatment? What can they expect out of the first level of basic classes from you at PSI?
If you go to my website, crviewer.com, and you go down to the bottom of the opening page, it has a link to the course that I have now on Kajabi. I'm teaching online these days so that I can get books written and other things rather than having, you know, people in my home here all the time. And, what you can expect is lots of practice. The remote viewing, the basic remote viewing course has a little over 160 videos in it that are progressive as you go, that teaches you those first three stages of the remote viewing. Then I have an intermediate course that teaches you applications, how to get extremely fine details and information and all that. But that comes later. And what you can do is, if you do the course the way you're supposed to, you can plan to practice and work on it for 1 to 2 years before you finish that course. This is not a toy. This is not a parlor game. This is not, you know, close your eyes and lean back and just say whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
But to get really good at it, to get to the point where the information that you give, you can database it and have close to 90% accuracy, that's going to take a long time. And so, this is work. When you get to that point, it's well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can go online and, watch a lot of yoga videos. There's a difference between that and having a yoga instructor. There's a difference between, and even to give a better analogy, you're not going to walk in and start breaking boards week one of karate class.
That's right.
That is like a year two experience.
Yeah. We start out very simply like that. We don't give blood and guts, murder and mayhem, anything that would be emotionally disturbing. We start you out with the very simplest of targets, teaching you those ideograms, those first curlicues and all that. And we teach you the military program. We have a lot of people who come in and they say, well, we have these great ideas and I'm going to start doing it that way. And, many times they'll say, we tried that. We have a database showing that that doesn't work. And here's why it doesn't work and how to get around the problems. And, some people take that personally because it was such a great idea.
Mm.
But listen, over the years, we've had thousands of fantastically great ideas about remote viewing. Probably 90% of them didn't work at all. But, but they were good and logical. They sounded great.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And you really do have to, with anything, whether it's paranormal, whether it's things like targeted individuals, like we were talking about earlier, before the show, you've got to learn to separate the wheat from the chaff. There's a lot of people out there claiming remote viewing programs. I mean, when I first heard about remote viewing was years ago, I guess Coast to Coast AM was the first place that I heard about it. And I remember ordering the SRI Institute, videotape. I'm sure it's still in my mother's garage somewhere. I got to find that thing and transfer it to digital. But it was like this little 15-minute tape that talked about the SRI program and what it was and everything else. And that was my introduction to the world of remote viewing. And my scope of that technology, and I say technology because it's like any tool, something that can make your life easier if properly used. And it really is a muscle that you have to learn to flex, and that you have to be okay with flexing. At what point, does somebody who is a remote viewer, is there a point that people step away from it? Like you were saying, some people go on to work with police agencies, things like that. Does it get too much for some people?
Sometimes it does. Yeah. Sometimes their religious upbringing will cause a conflict, and when it does, they will choose the religion over the remote viewing. The fact is that the two mesh perfectly. I always tell people, if God gave you an ability and you don't use it to help people, that's the sin.
Yes.
And one of the abilities he's given you is your intuitive ability. But, and some people find that the practice is just too much work. And so they will drop out. And other people will take the Inga Swan method and they get to go it really, really great at it. And they'll get out on the internet and somebody will say, oh, you don't need that. All you need to do is, you know, dance naked in the moonlight and you'll be great. And you're a remote viewer. And they'll go off and try other things. And one of the big things that draws people away is winning the lottery or winning at casinos and or winning ball games. And once they start getting the money because they're winning that, missing children, anything else, that just goes by the wayside because they're picking up money, you know.
Well, and you know, because I remember at the conference there, and there was I attended quite a few of the talks. Yours, I was doing interviews as well while some of those were going on, and yeah. One of them that I remember, I think I was interviewing you during it. It was either you or John Brandenburg. Was about playing the ponies. And yeah. And remote viewing. How I'm not calling into question the skills of remote viewing, because they're, you know, I've heard of people remote viewing distant times. I have heard of people remote viewing Mars, moon, all kinds of things. And I am not one to dismiss the experiencer, especially when it comes to something as provable as remote viewing, statistically yeah. provable and lab provable, to the point of like, let's put somebody in an anechoic chamber that you can't get radio waves through and they can still hit with pinpoint accuracy.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, I guess. At what point does it become witchery? You know, like are the results of playing the ponies that accurate and that regular?
Well, they can be. As far as witchery, I think it gets rid of the witchery.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, the mysticism is gone. You've got a protocol of interview and report. And there's no mysticism. There's no, you know, your head swiveling around in circles and floating up in the air or anything like this. There's none of it. But as far as the, you know, winning the lottery, things like that, that also takes a lot of work. There is a second form of remote viewing that was developed. And that's called associative remote viewing, developed at SRI too. And it's easy to explain. It's hard to gain accuracy in it. If I say to you that, okay, I take a piece of paper and I put down, if the Cowboys win, I'm going to give you some salt tonight at 10 o'clock. If the Packers win, I'm going to give you some sugar at 10 o'clock, okay?
Okay.
Now, I know what the task is, what the target is and all that, and you are a trained remote viewer, and I come to you and I say, tell me what you taste at 10 o'clock tonight. I taste salt. Okay. The only way you're going to taste salt is if the Cowboys win. I know who's going to win the game. And doing it this way, the thing is, on this associative remote viewing, you're associating a taste with an outcome that's unknown. And with this associative remote viewing, the principle is easy, but the practice of it can be very difficult. First of all, in the database, I have to know what you're good at. Are you good at taste? If you're not, hey, what are you good at? You're good at smells. Oh, if the Cowboys win, I'm going to let you smell some perfume. if the, you know. And so you have to know your viewer. The viewer has to be trained and practiced and all that. And so it is also a thing where it takes practice. It's not a parlor game. But one time, one of my students was very interested in the ARV. And so I said, okay, I'll teach you the ARV. And he called back a couple of months later, and he said, hey, I just won the victory lottery. And I said, great, you know, and he called back the next month. I just won the victory lottery again. He called back, I guess about 3 months later, hey, I just won the victory lottery again. And then I never heard from him again. And a couple of years later, he came to one of the IRVA conferences. I saw him drive up, and he got out of his car, and I said, hey, how's that ARV going? Well, I don't really do that anymore. And he turned around and got back into his Maserati and drove off.
Yeah.
And we have an analogy. If you find a gold ring in the backyard, you're going to tell all your neighbors. You dig a little deeper and you find the whole chest full of gold, you're not telling anybody.
Yeah, you're not going to tell a whole lot of people about the gold.
That's right. And we have people who are taking this ARV and running with it and getting some really fantastic results. I went using the ARV one time. I don't gamble. Okay. That's my upbringing. I went and sat across from a roulette wheel and predicted whether it was going to be the ball was going to drop into a black, red, or green spot on the wheel, and got it right 22 times in a row. Just unfailingly got it right 22 times in a row.
I will pay you a ticket to Vegas, Lynn.
Well, I got in, you know.
Trips on I got me, buddy.
I went over and I bet $10 and lost it.
As soon as you try to use it for your own gain, goodbye.
My subconscious as little kid said, I ain't going to hell. Yeah.
Well, and it was my trip to IRVA that actually inspired me to buy my random number generator here. And start kind of working on my own things with remote viewing and really just kind of starting to sharpen those muscles. What can people do, I guess, to try to start focusing these things before they sign up for your course?
I tell people, first of all, stay off the internet. There are so many crazies and loonies and fakes out there that are just going to give you bad habits. Just stay off of the remote viewing bit on the internet, and because you will develop so many bad habits that when you start the training, your first months of training is breaking bad habits. So don't do that. The other thing is, get a notepad and keep it with you. And whenever you get a feeling that something's going to happen, or just one of those intuitive ideas, write it down with the date that you got it. And then when it does or doesn't happen, go back in that notebook and say, this did happen on such and such a date, or here it is a year later, never did happen, so I was wrong, you know. And that's the beginning of keeping data. And what that will show you is when you're right, and you will learn through that being right in that intuition has a feeling to it. And you can start feeling and knowing when you're right about something's going to happen.
Mm.
And always tell people, you know, you try to do psychic work or something like that, no matter how wrong you are, your friends are going to say, yeah, yeah, you did right, you know, make excuses. Mm. No matter how right you are, the debunker is going to say, no, you were wrong, you didn't prove anything and all that. But the database and the documentation, that's going to be what tells you the truth. And if you want the truth, keep data. And, you know, they used to always say, show me your proof. These days, they say, show me your data.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, the data is there. There's been more than one study like you've, and even like you're saying, to keep your own data and to be willing to keep yourself honest within a process. When keeping yourself honest, what's your general expiration date? For a view, you know, let's say that you have intuitively seen something and you've sketched it down. What's your go-to expiration date? Do you give yourself like 6 months before you're like, well, that wasn't on?
No, in fact, you'll find people out there on the internet who are saying, we're going to predict what's going to happen next month. Mm. And so they'll say there's going to be a plane wreck. I'm sorry, there is a plane wreck every single month.
Yeah.
You know, you can't move on. Or they'll say that an explosion or, you know, something like that. There's an explosion somewhere in the world every month. And so... in the CRV that was developed by the military, they wanted hardcore facts. And so once you get into the higher stages, there's a thing called a timeline where we have found an event's going to happen. We bring up that timeline tool and we tell when it's going to happen. And that may be a year from now. It may be tomorrow.
Mm.
But the minute we put that time down and say, whatever I saw will happen now, that's your expiration date. If the same thing did happen a week later after you predicted, then you were wrong in your prediction, you know. So,
yeah, because otherwise, to have no expiration date on that data, like, leaves it totally open-ended.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's like, am I psychic if I say tomorrow the sun will come up?
Yeah. Predictably, that's happened for millennia. So odds are, you know, odds on favorite, you're in the ballpark.
Now, there is another thing. You were talking about the influencing.
Yes.
We have another analogy. The police come to a remote viewer and they say, where will the criminal be at 9 o'clock tonight? And you do your session, you say, oh, he's going to be at Joe's Bar and Grill eating dinner. And so at 8:30, they go out and hide in the bushes. And at 8:45, he walks up to Joe's Bar and Grill. They jump out, arrest him, and at 9 o'clock, he's in jail. Well, you were wrong. But if you had said at 9 o'clock he's going to be in jail, they would never have gone out to Joe's Bar and Grill, and he would be sitting there eating dinner. And so the fact is that acting on a prediction will change the future. And so, like when we say... this event will happen 1 week from today. And we turn that information in, like to the intelligence services or to the CIA or something like that. They're going to act on it. So the next day we have to do another session to see if the future has changed. And if it has, then we turn that report in. The next day they may have acted on that. So we, and the closer we get, the less effect an action that they take is going to have on the future. And so we wind up with a high degree of accuracy, even though the initial prediction was correct at the time, their actions on it will change the future, and so you have to keep doing updates. That's wow. Nothing more than the weatherman does about the weather.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And by watching the ever-shifting wind patterns can predict with some accuracy what's going on.
Yeah. Now, and so here again, this controlled remote viewing is not a parlor game, and it's not a toy.
Mm.
It's not just, you know, close your eyes and be psychic.
Yeah.
It's a definite tool that can give you control not only over your own psychic ability, but over your own future.
What?
Your own finances and everything else.
Well, and with that being said, what caveats do you have for those that want to study remote viewing and get into it? Is it all sunshine and roses? What are the warnings, if any?
In training, I try to keep it all sunshine and roses. I don't give blood and guts or anything like that. But here again, I tell my students.
Is there blood and guts?
Oh, yeah. 9/11, murder scenes, missing children, things like that. The police want to know about a missing child. And you start doing your session, and you have no way of knowing that missing child may have been molested, murdered, cut up into pieces and spread out across a square mile of land, you know?
Wow.
And you don't want to experience that. So in training, we train you to remote view. We don't give you this. You get out on the internet and somebody will say, I read a news report in my town where there's a missing kid. I want you to remote view and tell me, you know, about the missing kid. Absolutely not. And when people call me and they say, a family member has been taken and is missing and all that, I say, good. I will work for the police and all that. I don't work for them because anything you say is going to put them on an emotional roller coaster and it's going to pit them against the police who are trying to solve the case. And so, yeah, there are pitfalls to this. And most of the pitfalls come from the internet. Sorry.
No.
But,
there's a lot of misinformation out there, man. And that is one of the things that I caveat targeted individuals about. That is one of the things that I caveat paranormal investigators about. Everything.
That's right.
Those rabbit holes that are there, not that they aren't entertaining and fun, but you have to remember that shows that you see on TV with people ghost hunting and their things going off every 3 seconds and that is entertainment, an entertainment value. That is not a 98 percentile of investigations.
Not at all.
That is made and cut for television.
I call that self-made Hollywood.
Well, you know, and there's science and then there's sexy science. You know,
oh, yeah.
And there's real sexy science in there. Rarely you're going to see the real sexy science.
That's right.
that's the things like what Lockheed Martin just released that we talked about last Tuesday, where, hey, here's a miniature nuclear reactor that can fit into an F-16. Stuff like that. That's the real sexy science that they've been working on for 20 years, man. And by the time you hear about it, it's still 8 generations down the line from that.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, to know that by the time the general public got wind and knowledge of, you know, Project Stargate and the basic definitions of remote viewing and everything else. By the time we got wind of that, these protocols were eight generations down the line. The technology and the use of it was eight, nine generations down the line and way more honed than the hack through the jungle, even though what was being used was far from hack from the jungle, you know, in comparison to the techniques now and the honing that it's had, very much hacking its way through the jungle at that point, you know, and what has been probably, you mentioned 9/11 a few minutes ago. What has been probably the most frightening thing for you, that you've viewed? If it's something that you're not read onto that you can share, what's been probably the experience that shook you to the core the most in your remote viewing time, Lynn?
On the frightening thing, I got a, not a personality profile, but a plans and intentions task one time, where you get into the mind of the person and get their plans and intentions. And it was a foreign leader, a military leader, got into his mind, got his plans and intentions, and reported it. And there was something that was nagging at me. I couldn't pinpoint it, couldn't pinpoint what it was, but it was just this nagging feeling that I had missed something. And at the subconscious level I just hadn't picked up on it consciously. And so anyway, that was a Friday evening. I was driving home. I had about a 2.5 hour drive home every day. And I was planning what I was going to do that weekend. And, you know, it was a beautiful weekend. So I was going to go out, cut the lawn, work on the car, and I was going to do all this other stuff. And I was going to build some stuff, and I was going to kill my wife, and I was going to do this other stuff. And I thought, wait a minute, what?
Kill your wife?
Yeah. And I thought, where in the world did that come from?
Wow.
And I just dismissed it as being stupid. You know, I never would have done it. But when I came back to work the next week, that military leader's wife had died under mysterious circumstances, and there would be no investigation.
Wow.
And that's what I had, that's that nagging thing that I had missed. And so, you know, you can pick up on these things, and, you know, it, I would never have killed my wife.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, yeah, you can pick up on things like this.
That is, once again, much like your most incredible experience that moved you, that must be a stealing moment for you to know that that information passed through you at the least.
And, you know, we had been tasked with what's going to be in the newspaper on the following Sunday morning. And this was on a, this is on a Thursday. And, so I got that there was going to be a nuclear meltdown, and, described it, described the purpose of it, described how it happened and everything else. And, turned that in on Friday. And Sunday, there was nothing in the paper about it. And on Monday, there was nothing in the paper about it. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday before they came out and said there's been a nuclear meltdown in Chernobyl.
Wow.
And I had described it completely. And we were scored on this. and I had described everything about the Chernobyl meltdown to a T. And of course, I got a zero for it, my score, because that was not what showed up in the Sunday paper. And that was the task.
Yeah.
And that's the military attitude toward the viewing. Yeah.
Well, and the statistical attitude toward the viewing, like, great that you saw it. That's awesome. But the target was Sunday.
Yeah. The target was the Sunday paper. And I had been attracted to the meltdown. Now the meltdown did happen, I think, on Friday.
No.
Friday or Saturday, I'm not sure which. But it didn't make the news. It didn't make the news for almost half a week.
How often is it that news, things like you said, one of the best things you can do if you want to start remote viewing is ignore the internet, get away from the internet.
Yeah.
This mass barrage that we have of media, video, audio, everything in the world around us, how much does that influence the results of a remote viewing session?
Well, this is one of the parts of training. You have to learn how to ignore pollution, no matter how strong it is. One of the things that we would do is somebody would be going over to do a practice session. We didn't do this when it was a real operational session. And stand at the coffee pot. The viewer is going to go over and do a practice session. And they come up, get their coffee, and take it over to the other building so they can do their work. And right as they turn around to walk out the door, you say, your target this time is probably not the Eiffel Tower, and turn around and walk off. And they have to fight that, because you planted it in their mind. They have to fight that. And it teaches them how to ignore pollution.
Gotcha.
And this is a very big part of learning CRV. This is why it takes so long.
Yeah.
Learning the procedure is fast and easy. But learning to do it with accuracy, that's what takes the practice.
Wow. And what an incredible talent and skill. Those that I know who are remote viewers and the results that they're able to get. I would love to have you on again and again, Lynn. This topic is so entirely fascinating to me. And just to think of the possibilities of remote viewing, like we said at the top of the show, to know that it's being used in space exploration, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
I mean, you are more than welcome to come on anytime. Before we let you go, let everybody know one last time where they can go to find your lessons, where they can go to follow your remote viewing work, things like that.
Okay. The lessons are all online now, and you can link to them at crviewer.com. Also, if you look at Remote View Ranch, I got a little windfall in and bought a ranch, and we're building it up to be a training center for remote viewing, not only for my class, but also for, all qualified CRV trainers and, military if they need it. Want it and so forth. So it's a GoFundMe thing to get the place built and all after buying the ranch. that was my donation to the ranch. And so now then, yeah. And it's Remote View Ranch. That's all one word. .com. It has right now a piece of malware on it. So it'll come up. It's not a virus. It's called a clickbait. Whereas you click a button, it takes you to some advertiser. Like if you click the button that says contact Lynn Buchanan, right now it takes you to a dog trainer in New Zealand.
I've definitely had my website hacked. I've got the GoFundMe.com up right now. So
yeah,
that's at least the official that people can go to. I've definitely had my website hijacked. I remember the night that we had Anonymous on the show. I had a very good friend of mine who's a security professional, like swatting people away from my servers. that was a wild evening of broadcast. I remember when we ended, it was like, wow. Like 20 minutes before we went live, my whole website went down, from attack. So it was interesting. But
on the website, there's a link to me, and, I am getting like between 100 and 150 email a day. So, wow. I'm having a hard time keeping up with it, but if anybody has any questions, they can just drop me an email and I'll do my best to get them answered.
All right. Well, Lynn, please do hold the line while we close out this segment real quick and take our listeners off to commercial. We'll be right back with you, Lynn. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Lynn Buchanan, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/knowledge is our knowledge vault. That's where you can find all of those declassified government program documents, folks. Make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. If you're a whistleblower, if you are an experiencer of the paranormal, if you're a witness to UFOs, Sasquatch, what have you, feel free to stop on by. You can anonymously share your story and we will use your experience in future episodes with our experts and authors. So stay tuned, folks. Right after this, we will have our good friend and MUFON field investigator, Sev, talk on the show to talk about recent cases and investigative techniques with MUFON right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7%. Off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. We'll be right back.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Well, hello everybody and welcome back from our commercial break. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. Christopher Lynch out there is an amazing alchemist, is the only way I can put it. His CBD is absolutely phenomenal. It's the only stuff that I use. That's why I have them as a sponsor. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com. Make sure to use the code CURIOUS7. Get 7% off your entire cart. Our guest this segment is the amazing Sev Talk. She is the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. She was the MUFON Symposium MC this last year, and she is a part of the MUFON Experiencer Resource Team, which is what we're talking about this evening. How MUFON gets out in the field and how they handle experiencers, how they take the account in, how they deal with what is sometimes a very traumatic event for people. So welcome back to the show, Sev. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me return. I'm very grateful.
Always. We love talking with you since our first meeting, and to see you now come to the point of being hip deep involved with your local MUFON, with your state MUFON office, mm-hmm. and going out and being a part of this amazing experiencer resource team, which we'll be getting into. But first, for those who may not know, who may be hearing your story for the first time, explain to them how you came to be an experiencer to begin with, Sev.
It's been happening since I was a little girl, and I had been in complete denial about it until 2018. So I'm pretty new to coming out. It's the best thing I've ever done. But I was very, very, very afraid to admit that I was having this ET contact. And I certainly didn't tell anybody. And I just kept it inside for decades. And that caused a lot of problems. This is something I do encourage experiencers to come out. If you don't want to come out to anybody else or write a book or do TV shows, you don't have to do that. But it's important that you come to yourself. Because if you don't come out to yourself, you're hiding a very important reality about yourself. You're not expressing your authenticity. And really, the happiest way to be a human being is to be an authentic one.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, a prime example of that, for instance, is your own mentor, Kathleen Barton. Who recently made a post on social media talking about, hey, for those of you who've wondered where I've gone, like I haven't gone anywhere. It's just that my research has taken a different path than
it's happening. There's a shift.
Yeah. Where it's become much more of a spiritual journey.
Yes, it's become much more of an interdimensional, multidimensional event. So maybe some people are thinking about the MUFON field investigator getting a case and then getting in our car and driving out somewhere and taking all kinds of measurements and all kinds of other types of readings and things, soil samples and all those kind of things.
Sure.
That doesn't happen that much anymore because really the bulk of the ET contact is happening in an interdimensional way. And these often feel like dreams. And so that's why a lot of people are confused and they're thinking that these are dreams, but often they are not dreams. They're real events. They're just happening in this world where our culture does not really like to talk about or support. And that's why so many of us are so quiet about it. And that's why so many of us are actually having ET contact, but don't know it.
Well, and it's interesting because through interviewing folks like yourself, through interviewing people like Kathleen Barton a few times who you connected me with, and other researchers, it's interesting to see the true paranormal aspect that has come about with ET contact, and even the aftermath of contact, where people have started, the only way to really say it is being bestowed upon with abilities, be it healing abilities, ESP, things like that. Now, I want to read a segment from your book here, which I oddly enough, marked as a question point, and you just brought it up. This is from page 99, the chapter Time Warp. And these vortexes are known as time warp portals or wormholes. These are doors between the multi-dimensions. ETs enter and exit through these doors, sometimes taking you with them. Some of my ET contacts are through these portals. My body is taken through a time warp and replaced back into Earth time. To someone watching me, it would appear as if I hadn't left at all. I can enter a time warp and be back so quickly, it doesn't look like I left. It is mind-blowing stuff. Let's get into that for a moment, because like you're saying, these portals seem to becoming more common with people's experiences, yes?
Yes. The acknowledgement of them is they've always existed, but we're acknowledging them because as a society and as a culture, I started yoga in 1985. 1985 is when I started yoga. And back then people didn't really, were kind of laughing about it. They thought it was kind of silly. Now yoga is so common. Same thing with meditation. I've been meditating since elementary school and now meditation is not strange. I almost became an acupuncturist when I graduated from Loyola. And I didn't because an acupuncturist actually talked me out of it, saying it's still kind of poo-pooed. Now it's not poo-pooed at all. So all of this is part of this transformation of where we have expanded our consciousness and our awareness. So now we can have these interdimensional, multidimensional experiences and be more open, receptive, receptive and accepting to them. Whereas before when we poo-pooed yoga and we poo-pooed acupuncture and we poo-pooed meditation, we just weren't ready to understand this sort of communication.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And like you're saying, you started doing yoga, it was still very much in the quote new age movement.
Yeah.
You know, that's right up there with crystal meditation. And that's when, I guess, not when chakras came about, but when they came to the Western world, so to speak, and became common knowledge and people started talking about them. Even recently, my wife in one of her mom's groups, somebody was talking about her woo-woo friend who believed in crystals and crystal energy. And I was like, if she mentions it again, make sure to point out the cell phone in her hand and, you know, the liquid crystal display and the vibrating crystal that picks up her voice and gives her sound through her ear. And I gave her like five or six different ways that crystals were literally being used in a cell phone in her hand right now. So it's like, you can go woo-woo all you want, but it's pretty well science.
I do have something to say about crystals. You know, tomorrow night is a lunar eclipse.
Yes.
It's a red moon. I would suggest anyone who has crystals to put them outside so they can absorb that fantastic energy.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting talking about the portals, transportation to other places. Like you talk about being transported to the moon.
Yes.
During one of your visitations with these beings. And just before we had you on, we had Lynn Buchanan, who was one of the heads of the remote viewing program with the U.S. military. And just talking with him about the idea and even the idea that the whole remote viewing program came from a piece of work by a laser scientist talking about the strange principle that an atom has to be aware that it's being observed in order to stop and be observed. And the fact that phenomenologically scientists affect their experiments by literally the intent of their experiment. And how can you prevent that from happening? And that that work in vibration and how we affect the world around us is what led to the world of remote viewing. And it's interesting to see that now that work, not only at the MUFON conference did I hear about the shift of vibration with people in visitations. Kathleen Martin talked about a person who had a close encounter that they were basically shifted to another dimension via vibration and able to penetrate the skin of the craft. And Hal Puthoff even talked about that experience at the Remote Viewing Association conference this last year. So Hal Puthoff is one of the physicists that was behind remote viewing and the processes and the science. So to see these things coinciding now is really, really interesting. And for anybody who might be wondering, you know, how much of the portals, things like that, can be believed, let's get into that real quick, Sev, and how the cases as of late have been pointing that direction.
Well, I am a field investigator for MUFON, and I'm also on the executive committee of the Experiencer Resource Team. And as a field investigator, I deal with the 3D aspects of a sighting. And with the Experiencer Resource Team, or the ERT, that is more the multidimensional. Those are cases where people have direct contact with a non-human being, whereas just the regular field investigative work, there is no direct contact usually. So if I get a field investigator case, it's often somebody saw something in the sky moving in an erratic way, or we're getting a lot of reports about orbs more than ever, orbs everywhere. And so as a field investigator, then I have to go in and I have to look up a lot of stuff. I have to look at what the weather was like. I have to look at what the what was going on with the stars and the planets. I look at any satellites that are going by. I check out any airports that are nearby. Are there any military bases that are nearby? And then I look to see if anyone else reported anything like that in the same time frame. So there's a lot of investigation that goes into these cases that we're assigned. So that is for what I would call a typical case where someone sees something in the sky. Now, when it comes to the experience of resource team, that's completely different because now we're dealing with people who've made contact. And like you said, this can be an existential crisis for some people, as it was for me.
Yeah.
And so not only are we trying to get the information, but we're also trying to help them mentally and spiritually as much as we can. So just by talking to them, letting them know that we're listening and we're not judgmental, and we're here to help them as much as possible, usually soothes the witness. We can also offer experiencer groups for them to join. We have a list of vetted regression therapists and other therapists that we can offer to them. The work with the ERT, there's only about 50 of us around the world that do this. And I have to tell you, it's extremely rewarding. It's really, really a wonderful feeling to meet an experiencer who is very afraid, who tells me this is the first time I've even talked about it, but I just had to get out of my chest and I'm really afraid. I can't go to sleep at night. I can't turn the lights off. And then after talking with them, and we don't talk with them just once or twice. I mean, I have witnesses that I've talked with for months. They just want to continue having interaction. And by the way, we don't get paid for any of this. This is all volunteer work. And it's very rewarding to have someone come to me in a scared state and then eventually transform into a state where they're not as afraid. They can turn the lights off. They don't have the TV on. Yeah. And they start to understand that this is not a situation of victimization. This is why I don't like to use the word abduction. Abduction implies victimization. I do believe our higher selves are always at play. Our lower selves might not know what's going on, but our higher selves are asking for this experience. So when we talk with an experiencer, we try to help them understand, what are you learning from this? Why do you think it's happening to you? What are you learning from this spiritually? And that information is profound, and it really does help the person adopt a different perspective about who they are, about who we are, and why we're here.
Oh, absolutely. And especially their place within at least the phenomena that they experienced. There is more than one person that I've interviewed just on this show where it has driven relationships apart in their life.
Oh, yes.
with people that they had mutual experience with, where they just, like you said, did not talk about it.
Yeah, that happened with Terry Lovelace.
Yeah.
You know, Terry Lovelace, he is such a kind gentleman.
That's exactly who I'm referencing without actively saying his name. I'm glad you said it. But, love you, Terry. Because like he and his buddy, you know, like rolling as an EMT, that's the same as like being a beat cop with somebody. You know, you save lives, you lose lives together. And to know that after his experience with his friend, that their friendship just dissolved and disintegrated from not talking about it, and just this
and
suffering silence.
Died. His friend died.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think Terry knows why he died. When I asked Terry, why did your friend die at that time? I don't believe he knew why. I'm not sure about that, but that's pretty sad. So here we have two people. One person has decided they're going to face it. and they're going to deal with it, and they're going to process it, and they're going to move through it. And another person is like, I cannot even go there. And then imagine that turmoil. I'm not saying this happened to Terry's friend, but there are people who do consider suicide over this.
Oh, sure. Sure. Absolutely. Because there comes a point of ridicule sometimes that is very sad with any experience of the unexplainable.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're in the position that Terry was and was for years after that, you know, where he was literally an assistant attorney general. You know, there were cases that may have been retried if he'd come out in the middle of his career. You know, so the repercussions of knowing that and having that responsibility there can even further crush somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another big thing is, why is it happening to me? What happened was, I moved here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina in 2017. And on my second night here, I had this ET contact where they burned with the grays, and they burned two red X marks into my back. And that is when I couldn't deny it anymore. And that is when I decided to seek some help. And that's when I came across Kathy Martin, who helped me tremendously. She's now a friend of mine. She actually visited me here at my home a couple of months ago. And she's my mentor. And then, even after I talked to Kathy, and as helpful as she was, there was still a part of me that was still questioning things. So I told myself, well, you know, I don't have to do anything with this information. I'm just going to sit on it and then just let it organically develop. And then a couple months later, I woke up and I decided I'm writing a book and I'm actually going to come out. And it was a shock to me. And then when the book came out in just a couple weeks later, Alien Con in Baltimore, 2018 contacted me and said that I was a speaker. So I had my coming out in Baltimore at the Alien Con. And I had a lot of experiences in Baltimore because I lived in Baltimore for 20 years. So it was really the perfect place for me to come out. And that's where I learned experiencers, there's lots of them, and they need someone to talk to. So that convention changed my life.
Well, and to drive that point home a little bit more, from page 55 on your book, during in the chapter Conference with the Grays, I've been afraid of grays since childhood with no rational explanation. Because of my fear, I have never read a book about UFOs, grays, or abductions. Little do I know that my fear is about to be catapulted off the charts very soon. That was once upon a time your experience. That is how things were for you at one point, and the mentality in which you lived. How did you shift that?
Well, first of all, thank you for reading parts of my book.
Oh, absolutely.
For that. Yeah, that's really nice of you. How did I shift it? Well, it was what happened here on the Inner Banks when those two red X's were put in my back, and I had a conscious memory of being partially paralyzed on a table with a gray behind me. And that is what shook me. I couldn't deny these X's, and I have pictures of them on my website. I have pictures of them on my Facebook page, Instagram, and my book. You can't deny that is a frickin' X burned into my back. And to this day, no one has an explanation as to where that could come from. The little dots, it's comprised of 9 little dots, and they're equidistant. I've had people measure them. And I had one the second night I moved here, and then 9 days later, there was another one right across from the first one. And that is what shook me. That is what catapulted me into finally facing it. Because back then, I thought it was the grays were evil, and I thought they were victimizing me. I thought they were playing with me. I thought they were toying with me. So I had to understand what was happening at the time so I can make them stop. Now I have a completely different viewpoint. I see now that they were helping me, and I have no desire to ask them to stop because they're still helping me, as are other beings.
And what was that moment for you that I guess was the flip of the switch where you went from victim to understanding? Because once again, even as you said in your own words, catapulted into a world of fear. But so you were already fearsome of these things since your experiences from 8 years old and beyond, to the point of repressing the memories and thinking that they were something else. So at your point of acceptance, what was it that I guess changed your mind to a different understanding of your experience with the Grays and these other entities?
That's a good question. Well, it was a long time coming because I'm a transformational coach, and I started this work in 2012. So I've been doing this for quite a while. And as a transformational coach, I help people dig deep down inside to understand mental beliefs that they have that are just preventing them from success or progress. I talk a lot about the energy that we radiate and how the energy that we radiate is determined by our mind, our belief system, and how that creates our reality. So I'd been doing that work for quite a while, and it finally got to the point, 'cause I had been digging deep for quite a while. My second marriage ended. It was abusive. And after that, I'm like, man, I'm a victim. I've been divorced twice, and the common denominator is me. So I'm not going to blame them. I'm going to blame me. What am I doing? Why am I playing the victim here? And so along that search, then came this whole ET thing that I had to face because I also thought they were victimizing me. So as I was moving through understanding why I think I'm a victim, which is a lie, I'm not a victim, why did I accept that though? It's through conditioning, through family, through society, through culture. Many of us have the victim vibe. It's probably the heaviest vibe that my clients have, the victimization. And so once I started moving through that, then came the ET block, and I had to address it in order to remove this victimization vibe. Once I faced it, I saw, oh my gosh, they're not victimizing me either. Then my life completely changed. I lost the victim vibe. Now I feel I'm in control of my reality, and I can create my reality to my liking.
How has that changed your, specifically your one-on-one experience with these entities?
Well, I don't fear them anymore. I'm not in fear of them at all. I'm not in fear of any entity, although I did have that astral Men in Black, which was a scary experience. But that was an energetic battle, which I won, because it's all just energy. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. And because it's hard to quantify. Your answer about losing fear is absolutely beautiful, because I think it's a message that so many of us need to learn regardless of paranormal experience or UFO UAP experience or close encounter experience. But specifically, experiencers, I think, need to learn to look at their experience through fresh eyes like you did.
Yes, and not to be victimized by it. So if we think we're victimized by it, then it's scary because we think we're out of control. So if we realize, oh my gosh, my higher self is in play here, there's a reason I want this. Why do I want this? Because there's a reason, something that's going to help me become a better human. You know, I say better in quotes, or just help me function as a human, because being a human is a very, very difficult thing. Yeah. When we do the work necessary to face those dark sides, those dark portions of ourselves that really prevent happiness That work, many people are not willing to do. And that work needs to be done. It's also in an ET contact situation, because are you going to view your ET contact as being victimized, or are you going to view your ET contact as help to help you live a happier life on Earth? Which perspective are you going to take? And the thing is, it's not like you have one perspective. If you think you're a victim, then you're a victim on Earth, you're a victim on another planet, you're a victim in another dimension, yeah. You're a victim wherever you go. It's not like I'm a victim on Earth, but I'm not a victim when I'm dealing with the ETs. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that is the modality and vibration in which you have chosen to live.
Yes.
Is a victim modality.
And that's really not a comfortable way to live.
Yeah. And I, you know, once again, I think that we all need to reexamine ourselves spiritually throughout our lives and consider that, and consider how often we are looking at or judging situations because of previous traumas we've been through. And even for you to bravely admit, Sev, that It was partially your abusive relationship that was making you see these experiences in that light in a continued way.
Me too. Yes. I thought everything was abusing me. I thought that everything and everyone around me was determining how I was going to feel. Now we all know it's the opposite.
Well, and that is why I think that you are such a shining example, not only of an experiencer, but of somebody that should be on the experiencer resource team, because it truly does. There's one thing to being empathetic to a situation. There's another thing to having been in that situation and having been, I guess, in a situation where even socially people might not believe you to begin with. Much less talking about any kind of paranormal experience.
Right. Now, my book came out in 2018, and here it is just 4 years later, and look how far we've come. It's all over the news now. So it's not as scary to come out as it used to be. And plus, now there's so many forums to get help through social media that decades ago, it was very hard to find help.
You know,
so easy.
That is something that we talk about regularly with Reverend Michael Carter. Is the fact that back in, you know, 15, 20 years ago, trying to find a help group, trying to find a group of fellow experiencers to even have common knowledge with or have a common conversation without being judged was near impossible.
Right.
And now you can find them pretty regularly online, and there are reputable ones out there. And there's, you know, even things like MUFON and stuff like that, where you can reach out to.
I'd like to say something about joining MUFON.
Sure.
MUFON is a member. And so we have state chapters. So say you join the North Carolina MUFON, California MUFON, whatever state you're living in. That chapter has free guest speakers and free meetings that you can attend either in person or on Zoom. For instance, the North Carolina MUFON is going to have Kathleen Martin as the guest speaker Wednesday night. And if you're part of the chapter, you can come to this free Zoom meeting, listen to Kathy talk, and directly interact with her and ask her questions. So it's really cool to join MUFON because you really have this direct link with experiencers and ufologists and researchers from all over the world who come as guest speakers, and you have access to them.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it is not only that, it is amazing the community that's there. Even my wife, who you had a chance to meet in Denver. She's been going to improv comedy festivals for years, podcasting festivals. She's been to numerous Comic-Cons with me, things like that. And she was like, I cannot say that I have found a better energy group of people to be around than this MUFON crowd. She's like, everybody is so willing to share their story and share their experience. And no ad for MUFON, but I'm a lifetime member. The MUFON Journal is one of my favorite things to get every month. It's fantastic. You get tons of witness sightings, reports, great articles, things like that. It really is a fantastic community of research and archiving of experience. I think that more than the field research itself does more than anything.
Yes, to hear about other people's experiences definitely helps people come out.
Well,
that's why on my website, planetsev.com, I share stories anonymously, and I also share pictures and drawings.
Yep.
And I think it's really important that we share our stories. We don't have to tell our names if we don't want to. I understand that.
Yeah.
But it's really important. Yes, you found it on my website. So you click on True ET Stories, and if you scroll down, you'll see from all over the world, people have contacted me with stories and shared their pictures and their drawings. And there may be something that happened to one of our listeners. If you read through this, and you'll realize, oh my God, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
And it gives you some peace.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I have recently actually started up an experiencer page on our website for the same thing, so that if somebody has had an experience, we can come to people like you with it and talk about it, because maybe they are too intimidated to come on a show, but they're willing to type it out and anonymously share their experience. And like I said, I think that of anything is one of the most important things that MUFON has carried forward over, since its inception, is not only the field research, but the archiving of experience.
Yes.
And the archiving of shared experience by people. Mm-hmm. And I think that of anything is really the true gem and treasure of MUFON, is all of the stories that they have gathered and all of the witness experiences that they've gathered.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really is remarkable, the depth of their database, honestly.
Yeah.
It's really extraordinary.
Well, and with that being said, what is one of the most, I guess, incredible experiences that you have helped out with the ERT?
All right, I'm thinking, because there's a couple of them that are coming to my mind right away. I can tell you about two of them. They're both in North Carolina. And so, first of all, I asked the question, men in black. So there are men in black that we know about that come knock on your door and scare you. But there's also men in black that I call astral men in black. And I've come in contact with an astral men in black. And we're not really quite sure what these astral men in black are, who they're with, who sends them. Are they working for somebody? But they have a very negative vibe to them often, not always, but often. Mine had a horrible vibe to it. And so recently, there's a gentleman out on the western part of North Carolina who had this men in black experience, an astral men in black experience, where he felt himself lifted off his bed, and then he just went out through the window. We were talking about frequency change, and that's what they do, is they change our frequencies so that we can just dissolve through the walls and through the ceilings and through the windows. And then he found himself in a field, and there was a men in black there, and then the men in black took him through this door on the side of a hill, and he saw what looked like a big train station, and there was this big rectangular, it's almost like a small room, but in it was a lot of molten metal rods, and some other humans came in that he interacted with. He saw a human in front of a large screen playing with these knobs, and then there were symbols all over the screen. We get a lot of symbols. Well, a lot of people are given symbols. That's a very interesting topic. And there were other shadow beings there. And when I gave my book talk a couple weeks ago at a local indie bookstore, a man came and he said, "I'd like to tell you about my experience." And it was almost exactly the same as this person's experience.
Wow.
And yeah, he talked about the door on the side of the hill and going in through this door. And I was like, whoa, you're not the only one that's had that experience. So I've connected them so they can talk. That's the beauty of talking. Now, is that what people would call an alien or an ET? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, and, you know, I am hesitant, Sev, whenever it comes to those things. I suppose I'm a purist when it comes to stuff. I am willing to say that is a UFO. That is an object flying through the sky that we do not know what it is. Yeah. Am I going to, just with my realm of experience, jump to the fact that it is extraterrestrial? No. Mm-hmm. That's just my logic taking over. I doubt nobody's experiences. I do not doubt your experiences, anything like that, until proven otherwise. But I think that most of the sightings that we see tend to dwell in the world of explainable in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like the lights in the sky.
Absolutely.
A lot of it can be provable. Yes.
Absolutely. And what we have to focus on is, yeah, that 8 to 10% that are truly anomalous. And even whenever I deal with targeted individuals and come out and scan properties for radio waves, things like that. One of the telltales for me is if people get concerned to begin with when I start bringing out Geiger counters first and a gas leak detector and a carbon monoxide detector and things like that. They're like, "Oh, what's all that for?" It's like, well, let's get rid of the common things that it could be first,
you know, and
get to where we leave the anomaly. But let's check all these off the list to make sure that you aren't maybe living over a fault line. And have some gamma radiation leaking through your sub basement, you know.
Another thing to have is if you're an experiencer and this is happening to you often, and if you have marks, it's good to get a UV light. You can get one for $15-$20. If you shine it on there, there'll be if an ET. It seems like ETs leave this phosphorescent. Is that the right word or fluorescent light?
Yeah.
On you, and when you shine the UV flashlight on it, you can see it.
Interesting. And, you know, a minute ago, you were talking about the commonality of these symbols, even yourself having symbols emblazoned on you through a couple of experiences. How common is it that something like that happens?
Well, symbols are usually given to the experiencer. They're either shown to the experiencer through telepathically, or they're shown on a screen in a ship or in a room, or they are shown on their bedroom wall. And I've also received symbols telepathically. And the symbols that I have received are very similar to Sumerian writing. It's a series of lines and dots. Now, some people have had geometric symbols put on their body, as I have, and it still continues to happen. On my Facebook page, I just recently posted this series of pictures about this geometric mark that keeps showing up on my thighs. And then they're burn marks. First, they look like bruises, and then they turn into burn marks, and then they turn into these. You can clearly see a geometric shape there. So the X on my tush, it happened on my left cheek, and then it happened on my right cheek. A lot of people ask, what is the significance of the X? Well, X is an ancient symbol. There's lots of research going into what is the meaning of X. I'm not sure what the meaning of X is. X marks the spot. But I do believe that I was marked in an area that helped release Kundalini energy. When Kundalini is released, you have this undeniable, overwhelming need to know the truth, starting with yourself. And that's what happened to me.
Interesting. And, you know, once again, to see just over the last few years since I first had you on the previous incarnation of this show, which was shortly after you published
Beer.
Your book. What's that?
Dudes and Beer.
Yeah. it was a great show. It got to the point where it could not grow any further under that name. So it's been amazing to see where it's come since then. And it's been more amazing, like I said, to see where you have come over the last few years, even with your own sharing your own story and the ease with which you share your story and your experience and the changes that you went through personally when dealing with this.
Yeah, it's the best thing I ever did is to come out because my life has changed really beautifully. I'm really at peace. I feel like I'm in control. I'm very, very, very conscious of the energy that I radiate. I'm very conscious about the thoughts in my mind. And I'm all about being of service. I wake up every morning and I say, I'm of service. How can I be of service? And that's such a nice feeling. Every time I see it, I say that. I just feel this rush of energy run through me. And so with that comes, it's not only peace, but what goes away is society's brainwashing of getting, doing, being. Mm. You know, all just like what society tells you what your life should look like and how you should look like and what you should be accomplishing. Like all of that just disappears. It's not important anymore. And what happens is you create your reality. You create the successes that you want, not that society wants to have for you or not that your parents want you to have. You create the kind of life that gives you peace where you want to live, not where your family thinks you should live. So what happens is all of a sudden you're really redirected to pay attention to your heart. And there then the bond between the heart and the mind, that highway actually opens up. And if you live your life paying attention to the signals between the heart and the mind, you really do find that manifestation happens very quickly. You're very aware of synchronicity. And everything just, it's like you can take a big breath and like a lot of burdens are just thrown off your shoulders. And it's just a way of living without feeling frazzled and without feeling stressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And one quick question. There have been a lot of things going on in the community as far as CE5 protocols, things like that.
Yeah.
Communicating with other beings via telepathy, that kind of stuff. Do you see any precautions in that? Do you see any issues with that? Any words of warning from you regarding that?
Yes, thank you for asking. So as I said earlier, I help my clients determine the quality of their energy because the quality of the energy is creating their reality. And so if you are radiating an energy that has the quality of fear in it, then that's a lower vibratory frequency. And so you will be aligning with lower vibratory beings on Earth. And in the other realms as well. So that's why it's really important to keep your vibe as high as possible. And on my YouTube channel, Alien Spirit, I have free videos about how to Raise Your Vibration. And also I have free guided meditations to help you connect with other beings, whether they be ETs or whether they be spirit guides or dead people, who whatever being that you want to communicate with, you can. But it's very, very, very important. What kind of vibe are you putting out there? You're like a lighthouse. And so you radiate this vibe and everything can feel your vibe. And you're going to align with beings that have a similar vibration. So try your best to keep your vibe high so you can align with higher frequency beings. So you will not feel scared when you have your experiences. Because lower vibratory beings make us scared.
Absolutely. Even being of low vibration and running into a high vibration being can be extraordinarily intimidating.
Yes. Yeah. So you can just, it's really easy to figure out what kind of vibe you're radiating. Just look at your life. What are your friends like? What is important in your life? How happy are you? How content are you? How fulfilled are you? How authentic are you? There's so many ways to really understand the kind of vibe that you're exuding, and you can change it. You change your vibe, you change your reality.
Oh, absolutely. Sev, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show again and again and again over the last many years. The people that you have introduced us to in the community, I can't thank you enough. It's always great talking with you. Your energy is always fantastic. Like I said, I cannot think of a better advocate for either MUFON or experiencers all over the globe.
Chris, thank you so much. That's so kind. And I would like to thank you for everything you do. You were at the MUFON Symposium. You were broadcasting from there. You were doing interviews. I think you endorsed, or you were a sponsor.
I was.
You do a lot, too. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything you do.
Absolutely. It's all about being able to... the only way that things like MUFON happen, things like that, are through sponsorships or through people joining. And it's one of those... Yes. I've always been a put your money, put your time and talent where your mouth is kind of person. And... If joining MUFON as a lifetime member is something that I can do now in my life, I will gladly do that to help support them and all the work that they do, especially with people like you. So
thank you.
Thank you for your time, as always, Sev. Before we let you go, of course, one more chance for shameless self-promotion. Let people know where they can go to get spiritual lessons from you, where they can go to file an experiencer report with you or with MUFON. Let everybody know all that information.
Thank you. My website is planetsev.com, and you can contact me there personally to tell me about your ET story, or you can contact MUFON. I have the YouTube channel Alien Spirit. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm also featured in an episode of a Canadian TV series, UFO Contact. I'm in talks about some other interesting TV projects. I have conferences coming up. I'm doing Comic-Con here on the Inner Banks of North Carolina in a couple weeks. My message really is, if you're an experiencer, please deal with it. Please don't let it fester or upset you anymore. There's many of us here who want to help you, so just please reach out. You can reach out to me either through my website, planetsev.com. My email is sev@planetsev.com, or you can contact MUFON.
Absolutely. Sev, once again, thank you so much for your time, as always. Thank you for your rousing realm of expertise when it comes to dealing with experiencers and how to handle that. I think it's a lot of people may be like, well, why do I need to know this? I think you need to know it in our modern day in society. More and more, as I travel the country, just as a casual person hanging out and having a drink in the hotel bar, when I see a news clip go by on mute, I see conversations spring up, Yeah. And once again, the minds are more open in our society than they have been before. And to be able to be there in support of somebody when they do have that moment publicly where maybe after a couple drinks, they're willing to share their story, where perhaps you aren't standing there mouth agape, you know, and you can empathize a little bit and understand what it takes and what somebody has gone through to come to the point of sharing that. So that's why I think it's important for all of us to be armed with this information of the ERT and what you guys are doing and what you do for experiencers, because I think we all know an experiencer out there. It's just the fact that they haven't shared their experience with us. They don't feel comfortable.
And I was just about to say to your listeners, you could have a family member that is experiencing and you don't even know it because they're too afraid to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, well said, Sev. Thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you.
Stay tuned real quick. Stay with us while we close things out, Sev. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of our guest, Sev Talk, of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That is where you can go to find the Knowledge Vault. CuriousRealm.com/knowledge will take you to our Knowledge Vault, and you can get all the declassified Stargate documents that we were talking about with our first guest, Lynn Buchanan, tonight. Stop on by and share your story with us. CuriousRealm.com/story is our experiencer page. That's where you can anonymously share your experience of the paranormal, UFOs, UAPs, Bigfoot, other cryptids. If you're a targeted individual, there is an anonymous form there where you can leave your name. We will use your experiences in experiencer episodes, talking with our professionals and guests and sharing your experience anonymously. So until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.